You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or subscribe to Brookings Podcasts through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm from California, so it's very early morning for me. Welcome. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. My name is Amy Waterman, and I work for Intel Corporation. And I wanted to start by saying that Intel is absolutely delighted to be here this morning to participate in a discussion on the recent research collaboration with the Brookings Institution and the China Academy of Information and Communications Technology. It's been an honor for Intel to support this work. This work is highlighting the critical steps to advancing the future of smart transportation and the necessary technologies, such as 5G, that will enable advanced transportation capabilities worldwide. 5G will take the industry well beyond communications, bringing together wireless, computing, and the cloud. It will truly enable seamless and ubiquitous communications for billions of devices and things. With 5G, devices will be able to communicate with one another, with edge servers, with the core data center across very wide areas, and this will all be done via low latency connectivity, which in turn will release a tech explosion of innovation across an array of verticals, not the least of which is transportation. Smart vehicles have actually been on the road for some years now. In fact, in 2015, Intel demonstrated the ability of self-driving vehicles as part of a 3,400-mile road trip. But since then, we've been doing a lot of other work. And today, we're making significant progress, and one of the ways we're doing that is an expected deployment of 100 fully autonomous vehicles. These vehicles are using some of our technology from our Mobileye acquisition, which include computer vision, sensing and mapping capabilities. It also utilizes Intel's open compute platforms, our expertise in data center, and 5G communication technologies. At Intel, we believe that the 129 million self-driving cars that will be hitting the road between 2020 and 2035 can be enhanced by broad-scale deployment of 5G. And in fact, it is only with 5G that we'll see the full capabilities of smart transportation realized. The future of autonomous vehicles rests on their ability to securely and reliably connect at ultra-low latency. With an evolutionary path to 5G, cellular vehicle-to-X technology will offer superior performance to support connected vehicles as they communicate with transport infrastructure. As the research you're going to hear about today, produced by Brookings and CAICT, highlights, it's essential that we make the necessary investments in infrastructure, technological innovation, and in policy. Why is this so important? This is important because in the U.S., it's estimated that investments in physical infrastructure and the Internet of Things to support transportation in particular could create between $3.9 and $11 trillion in annual economic growth by 2025. This is in addition to the trillions of dollars service providers are investing in upgrading their networks on the path to 5G, and is in addition to the $40 trillion estimated dollars smart cities in the U.S. are contributing to modernizing their digital infrastructure. China has been even more aggressive in their pursuit of smart transportation and intelligent connected vehicles. The Chinese government, industry, and enterprises have jointly developed new initiatives and launched a series of pilot projects to speed up deployment. One in particular is a program called Made in China 2025, and it includes many projects, several of which are designed to advance China's automotive industry and transportation system. The government has set a goal that by 2020, over 50% of vehicles will include driver assistance, partial automation, or conditional automation systems. And the goal by 2025 is 80%. There is much that we can learn from China's leadership in transportation and their recognition of what many of the benefits could be. If governments and industry in the U.S. and China continue to invest in developing the technical and physical infrastructure as well as the policy, we believe that the societal, environmental, and economic benefits that can be achieved are unlimited. Smart vehicles hold the key not only to improving quality of life, but also could save millions of lives. Imagine a world where traffic accidents caused by human error are virtually eliminated. Think also, and I think this is the most interesting part, think also of where a world where the elderly and citizens with limited mobility can have access to the same resources, the same locations and experiences as everyone else, where transportation is no longer a barrier, but it is a gateway. Envision the impact of taking millions and millions of cars off the roads. Imagine the reduction to CO2 emissions and the impact this could have on traffic congestion and the climate. Smart and connected vehicles also could create a wealth of economic opportunity. It's estimated that by 2050, the sales of autonomous vehicles alone will comprise 50% of new sales. And this will result in $7 billion added to the global economy. And this figure does not account for the potential of launching new industries and services and all of the supporting technologies that could be created to support the myriad of connected things. The commitment by governmental organizations like CAICT and the collaborations between these groups and research institutes like the Brookings Institution and providers of technology like Intel are essential to illuminating the possibilities. We are very pleased to be engaged in automotive research with CAICT and Brookings, and I'm looking forward to hearing the perspectives of our presenters today. This research and the opportunities in China and the United States is an essential component to identifying the necessary investments in infrastructure, regulation, and standards. We are confident that with close collaboration between governments, technology providers, and auto manufacturers, we can lay the foundation today for the support of smart transportation and 5G for tomorrow. My hope is that together we can realize a vision of smart and connected transportation with equitable access and safe and enjoyable transportation for everyone. And with that, I would very much like to introduce and welcome Mr. Yu, the CTO of CAICT, to share some opening remarks. Thank you. Mr. Yu.
Distinguished Vice President, Dara West, Amy, dear guests, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure for us to visit Brookings again. 4 years later, four years ago, sorry, we were here to jointly release the white paper on mobile health and conducted an effective discussion. The result of our joint research exerted positive influence in both countries. I hope our joint research on smart transportation this time can similarly offer support for government and industry in both China and the United States. As you know, smart transportation is regarded an important approach to tackle traffic safety issues, congestion, and pollution. New generation ICT, especially 5G, IoT, and AI, are used to accelerate intelligent development of transport system. They are also used to help improve transport system the safety and the efficiency, facilitate development of fully automated driving and construct a future transport system is highly collaborative and intelligent. On the other hand, smart transportation is also seen as a key to promote transformation and upgrade both of traditional automobile and the transportation sector, and shape new drives of economic development. Intelligent connected vehicles, together with electric and shared vehicles, will reshape the future of automobile and even the transportation system. China pays a great attention to the development of smart transportation. It has made positive progress in top-level design, technical research, standardization, the application demonstration, and the industrialization. Regarding intelligent connected vehicle, the work program on innovation and the development of connected vehicles was released, and the strategy and the innovation and the development of connected intelligent vehicles was formulated with public opinions. Related ministry cooperated with provinces now to have to promote the development of we call it 5+2, altogether 7 demonstration areas for application of connected vehicles, such as the city of Shanghai and the Zhejiang province and Wuxi. Meanwhile, in order to facilitate the cross-sector and the cross-industry collaboration, MIT joined hands with other ministries set up special committee on development of connected vehicles, and CICT has been active supporting make policies on smart transportation in China. We also take the need to set up we call the CV2X working group under the IMT 2020. It's a promote group for 5G, and Intel is also a member of this promoting groups. The 5G promoting group is to drive technological and industrial cooperation with cross-industry research institutes and enterprise around the world. CICT enjoys a sound foundation of research and co-work with the United States Research institutes and the industrial organization and enterprise. It continuous conduct joint research with Brookings and had sound effort, I believe, in both countries. I hope the exchange today will enable the two countries to deepen understanding on the policies, standards, and industrial promotion on smart transportation, promote establishment of a long-term cooperation mechanism and drive forward technology innovation, application promotion, and industrial development on both two countries, and draw a beautiful blueprint on smart transportation. At last, I would like to especially thank Amy and Inter for the, your great support to the project. And I would especially thank Mr. David West. We have a very good cooperation and joint research during past 4 years. And I wish the conference great success. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. So I would like to join Amy and Mr. Yu in welcoming you here today. We have a large number of people in the auditorium and a number of people watching our webcast as well. So we're excited about the program. We appreciate Intel's financial support for the project. For those of you who would like to make comments, we have set up a Twitter handle at hashtag smart cities. That's hashtag smart cities. So feel free to post any reactions that you have. As Mr. Yu mentioned, this is our second project with experts from the Chinese Academy of Information and Communications Technology. Several years ago, we worked on a project about mobile health in China and the United States and put out a paper and did events both in Beijing as well as here in Washington, D.C. And we got a very positive response to that paper. So when the opportunity came up to do another project with CAICT, we were happy to do so. So our latest project assesses smart transportation in China and the United States. And on our website, we have a white paper published both in Chinese as well as in English entitled Smart Transportation in China and the United States. And what the paper does is to compare what the two countries are doing in the transportation area, the progress that has been made, and the obstacles that need to be overcome in order to move forward. So what I'm going to do is discuss the opportunities, the challenges, and what's happening in the United States, and then my Chinese counterpart, Yuming Gi, will discuss Chinese developments and our recommendations for moving forward. Okay, and first I will call up my PowerPoint. All right, move this to full screen. Okay. So today is a time of great opportunity in transportation. So here is the Google self-driving car that is now logged over a million miles on the highway. In China, this is the Chinese version of the driverless car. I was in Beijing visiting the company Baidu, which is the internet search engine that's very prevalent in China. And so like Google, Baidu is spending a lot of time developing its vehicles. And so the issue is that every country around the world that's focused on transportation is suffering from certain problems. Many large cities have congested highways. Our streets today simply are not equipped for the number of vehicles that travel them. Traffic delays are estimated to waste more than 3 billion gallons of fuel each year and 7 billion hours of citizens' time. There also is the big problem of highway fatalities. There have been about 35,000 fatalities in the United States resulting from highway accidents. In China, there are 260,000 people who die each year from automotive accidents. In the United States, about 39% of all highway fatalities involve alcohol, and 94% of U.S. accidents are estimated to involve human error. And so there obviously are a lot of issues associated with autonomous vehicles, but there's very little drunk driving or distracted driving with autonomous vehicles. Now, of course, this week we did experience our first U.S. fatality resulting from autonomous or an autonomous vehicle, the one that happened in Arizona, and I'll talk about that more in a minute. Air quality is a huge problem in every urban area. Transportation contributes to the carbon dioxide emissions and the overall air pollution that we are seeing there. The economic cost of accidents amount to over $242 billion in costs from those types of accidents. But the good news is that there are advances in smart transportation that offer hope of improving each of those problems. And this includes advances in terms of intelligent vehicle systems, in-road reflectors and devices that are embedded in the road that can help guide the path of those vehicles, vehicle sensing systems and collision avoidance systems that are becoming more prevalent, remote sensors along the highway, and the application of dynamic traffic lights that are based on traffic flows and help ease the congestion problems because they are dynamic in nature and based on real-time developments. So if there's a lot of traffic in one direction, the traffic light will adjust to those flows and help to ease the path forward. These advances also dovetail with advances in digital communications. Obviously, we're on the cusp of rolling out 5G networks in a number of major American cities. We are reaching the point of near ubiquitous connectivity in those places. The 5G networks are going to enable much faster and more intelligent design and use of those networks. We're seeing the emergence of high-speed broadband, vehicle-to-car-connected systems, reliance on cloud computing, and AI algorithms that are going to help drivers avoid accidents and understand the road conditions. The result of all these developments is that transportation is poised to become one of the most advanced examples of technology innovation. As Amy noted in her remarks, by 2035, industry experts are estimating there are going to be 129 million autonomous vehicles on the road. And so things are going to change very rapidly. The issue of driverless cars is not a futuristic vision that's 5 or 10 years away. They're on the road now in pilot tests and are going to be on the road for real starting next year. So I'm going to discuss the situation first in the United States, and then my Chinese counterparts will discuss the situation in their country. In the United States, there is a lot of experimentation taking place. Car companies are investing billions of dollars. My Brookings colleagues Cam Carey and Jack Karsten put out a report that found that there's been over $80 billion in investments in autonomous vehicle technology between 2014 and 2017. So we're expecting a rollout by next year of fully autonomous vehicles in many cities across America. This is probably going to happen first in the car sharing area and in the area of truck delivery. It'll be a while before it actually reaches the car consumer market, just because the cost of the vehicles will be a little more expensive. We're seeing a lot of road testing that is going on now. Waymo, the division of Google, has driven over 1 million miles on the road. And so there are lots of things that are taking place to try and advance the technology in this area. But obviously this week, there was a major setback. We saw the first fatality from an Uber autonomous vehicle that struck and killed a pedestrian in Arizona. There is an investigation underway regarding the details of that. Pending the results of that investigation, Uber has announced that it is suspending its road testing until it determines exactly what happened. Other companies are considering the same type of thing. So this obviously is a challenge for the entire industry, and all of us want to learn a lot more about what went wrong before we see a widespread deployment of this issue. One of the challenges in the United States is at the public policy level, in the sense that when you think about the transportation area, much of the regulation is not federal in nature. It's at the state and local level. And so the result is that we have fragmented regulation. Many of the traffic rules and regulations governing the conduct of vehicles is handled at the state level. It's one of the reasons why Uber went into Arizona, because Arizona was a autonomous vehicle friendly state where the governor had made a priority to encourage companies to come in, do actual road testing. But across the country, we still have a situation largely where there are 50 states that have differing rules on cars, on drivers, on liability questions, and so on. So that's a lot of variation in terms of the rules and regulations. That creates problems for autonomous vehicles, just because the states are not consistent in how they're thinking about the future of autonomous vehicles. Oftentimes, there are contradictory rules and regulations, and so we need more consistency regardless of the place within the country. There have been some policy changes designed to ease the development of this sector. For example, the U.S. Department of Transportation has issued guidance to attempt to simplify regulation in this area. And in its guidance, it basically left the traffic rules to state and local government, pretty much consistent with what has been the case in the United States. But it did turn the regulation of transportation software more over to the federal government. It basically put the Department of Transportation in charge of autonomous vehicles in terms of the software component. And basically, that was an effort to try and create a national standard for moving forward and to deal with this problem of 50 different sets of state regulation. The DOT guidelines also set up a process by which it would work. It said it would work with the car manufacturing companies to offer guidance as new situations emerge. So the car company could go to the particular regulator at the federal level, kind of talk about what they were experiencing, ask for advice on how certain types of situations should be handled, and then the federal regulators would offer their guidance. So again, that was a way to try and simplify the regulation and create a more consistent path for going forward. The other big development this week has been the rise of a possible trade war with President Trump imposing tariffs on steel and aluminum. This obviously is a big deal for the sector of autonomous vehicles in general, because a substantial part of manufacturing costs involve those raw materials. Those types of tariffs will raise the cost on cars and slow innovation. So we think the U.S. administration should reconsider that policy on tariffs before things get out of hand. It is something that is very important in terms of encouraging digital innovation in general, but it's particularly relevant in terms of the transportation sector in particular. At this point, I'm going to turn the rest of the presentation over to Yuming Ge. He is a researcher at the Chinese Academy of Information and Communications Technology, and he will discuss the Chinese situation, and then after that, we will take some questions.
Yeah, hello everyone. My name is Mingyi from CICT. Thanks very much for Daryl's introduction, and it's my great honor to be here to have more discussion on the smart transportation with the expert from the American side. So Daryl West has introduced much more about what is going on in the United States and what's the problems we are meeting. So next, I will introduce much more information from the China side, what is going on in China about smart transportation. And finally, I will get we will have some common views for the future, how to promote the development of the technology innovation and the future industrial. Yeah. Here, from my side, I will talk four aspects today. The first is the current state in China, and second is the task of the next step, and to promote the next step, what is going on, and we need what's the measurement and the future cooperation between the China and the U.S. From the top-level design in China, we have published several policy documents to support the development of smart transportation, also the connected vehicles, intelligent vehicles. Even we have different words from the different industry, but almost the same ideas is that to using the ICT technology to change the traditional industry of the transportation and the vehicles. So from the national level, we have the Made in China 2025 is to promote the intelligent vehicles and other products. And also we have the Internet Plus, the strategy for the innovation of the Internet together with the traditional industrial. So here one action is the convenience transportation. Here is talking about connected vehicles. And then we have the 5-year plan for the transportation. We want to do more and more work using the ICT technologies to change the traditional transportation. And we will set up a comprehensive transportation system. And we know that for the transportation, for the smart transportation, it's a cross-industrial aspect. So in China, we have more than 20 departments working together. We have a special committee to jointly solve the problem of the smart transportation. Then from the ministry level, we have published the document of the Internet Plus convenient transportation. And from the vehicle aspect, we have the middle and long-term deployment plan for the automobile industry. And also from the NDRC, we have the intelligent vehicles innovation deployment strategy. This strategy is still under discussing, and it's already the draft version is to the public is in the year of this beginning. Yeah. So this is from the policy level, and then we know that for the cross industrial promotion, we need to do some standard work together with different aspects, different industrial. So in China, MIT working with ICC together to join a whole view of the standards need to do in the different aspects. We have the common intelligent connected vehicles. We have the general requirement, and we have the information communication, and we have the electronic products. Totally under the guidelines of the connected vehicles. So more than 100 of standards are planned to do. So we also, for the connected vehicles, we have to, following the 3GPP of the cellular V2X, we have to do the standards in China about LTE V2X from the not only the physical layer, but the app layers, the application layers, and also the date, how to solve the future of the applications. And also we have the standards for the smart transportation. More than almost 100 standards are undergoing. Yeah, we are formulated. And then from the industrial view, we have a lot of products already to change the world, to change the mobility services, and to change the smart transportation. On one hand is that we have some of the product of HMI in the car already, and also we have the product for the V2X communications, and also we have the products for the some of the other products like the FCW and the LDW, some of these kind of devices, smart devices in the vehicles. And also in the future, the product device is not so important. The important date data coming from the connectivity, data coming from the vehicles. So according to this data, the future, the ecosystem based on the data applications is more and more important. Just as we have seen, we have the car sharing already, and almost 400 million of people are sharing the cars in China already. So we have already have the UBI, the insurance based on the data coming from the vehicles. So in the future, you can see the ecosystem is changing based on some of the smart devices and based on some smart and intelligent technologies used in the inside of the vehicle and used for the vehicle communications. Also, to promote the cooperation in China, we have set up some of the organizations and the alliance, just like the Mr. President Yu have introduced the MT 2020. It's working to promote the ICT technologies with the traditional industrial, like the transportation. And also, we have the China ITS Industrial Alliance. And we have the also the alliance from the car vehicles of the China Industrial Innovation Alliance for the intelligent and the connected vehicles. So this is different alliance from different aspects, different view from different industry. But we're also working together in China to promote the whole smart transportation ecosystem. Yeah. And also, we know that for the innovation of the new technologies, we will do a lot of research work, and also we need to be the technology could be commercial. We need to set up some demonstrations and payloads. In China, we have set up almost 7 demonstration zones to do the test of these innovation technologies. And also, the MOT supports 8 provinces in China during this year to set up the intelligent transportation system technologies. Okay, so that is what is going on and what we have done in China. How about the future? It's already, we have the smart transportation, it's not yet. So we need to more work on this point to promote the development of the industrial and to promote the innovation from the user side. So we work together with the Daryl together, we get 4 conclusions for the future of the next step to promote the development of the smart transportation. The first is the infrastructure. We know that for the roadside, we have already have the infrastructure, but it's not connected. It's not information. Some of the information you can only see, but not get the information from the video frequencies. So first, we need to the infrastructure more and more connected, and the infrastructure could be smart. And second, that if only this infrastructure is ready, it's not enough. We need to construct a network connecting all the elements for the transportation, like the personals and the infrastructure and the vehicles and even the cloud of the network. So we need the V2X communications, we need 5G, we need AI in the future to construct this whole network. And according to this communication network, it should be high reliability, low latency, and high bandwidth, and the high to support the high mobility. And the third is the we know that not only for the transportation, even for the autonomous driving, the navigation and the map, especially the high precision map, is more and more important. So we need to more research work on this point to do the services with the map, with the high digital map and the high precision map together. This map is not only the percentage, but also accuracy, but of the more and more information. We need to do the real-time information of the map. And the last one is not the final one. Maybe we need to apply of more and more information of the technology of the cloud computing and the big data technologies. I also explained that the technology is the future. It's not the aim of our to promote. The promote of the industry and the ecosystem to set up. So, based on the data, we can construct a new ecosystem together with the ICT experts and the ICT companies, together with the traditional car manufacturing and the transportation companies together. So, we have the some aspects already. Maybe using the connected vehicle information, we can do the digital control of the signals of the lights. And also we have the car sharing, and we have the autonomous open source platform like the Google maybe, and also in China we have the Baidu to open source for the autonomous technology innovation. Yeah. And to be sure, all these tasks could be done, and in the future, we need more and more measurements to set up. The first is the deployment strategy from the top-level design. We need to promote the cooperation between different industries from the government level and from the alliance, from some of the organizations. And then it's the standards, because from the different industry where we're discussing, we have different ideas, and even the language is not the same. So we need some of the standards to the vehicles and to the transportations and ICT guys working together. Yeah, and then we need to strengthen the international cooperation. As Daryl West has explained, it's in the future, this industrial smart transportation is not a local aspect. It should be global. So we need to more and more international cooperation working together to promote the innovation. And fourth is the date and the privacy. Yeah, you know that if in the future the vehicles all connected, all the data maybe can collected by others. So how about protection of the data? How to be sure we have the privacy is more and more important. And then we need to be sure the safety. Yeah, if the car is autonomous, if the transportation is autonomous, how to be sure the transportation could be safety? And we need to be sure for the safety of the cybersecurity, also very important. So we have already had a lot of talk with Darius together, and we know that from the United States, from China, we are facing the same situations, facing the same problems, and we also want to work together in the future to join to promote the innovation and join to promote the industrial cooperation between the United States and the China side. Yeah. So let's welcome Daryl West and our Vice President Yu together. We can have more discussion here. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you very much for that presentation. So that kind of sets the background in terms of some things that are happening here in the United States as well as what is happening in China. So I just want to start with a question about the role of technical standards in autonomous vehicles. I mean, we know in other areas of digital innovation that having some agreed upon standards makes it easier for companies to innovate and to be able to move forward. So you mentioned in China there already have been the development of, I think, 90 standards, and that you've worked with MIT on that. Could you just talk a little bit about what you're doing in the standards area and how the process has worked?
Okay.
Either one of you.
现在呢，首先我们就先来提一个问题。那么就是关于科技标准的这个问题。我们知道呢，在许多的这种数字创新的领域，若是有更大家同意的进一步的这个标准，会促进更多的刺激，以及使得我们的科技创新更加的前进、迅速以及顺利。那么，我现在想要问的这个问题呢，就是您刚刚在报告之中有提到，目前在中国已经设定了。 将近90个这样的标准，同时呢，您与工信部也一起在这方面进行了许多的努力以及工作。可不可以请您谈谈关于标准，目前呢做了哪些工作？同时呢，这个程序是如何进行的？好，谢谢。
So I will explain first. 那我们从两个方面来回答这个问题。第一个的话就是说，标准工作从总体上来讲，各个部委之间是在合作推进当中的，尤其我们也是有这样一个车联网的一个整体的一个标准体系的一个设计。 那么是从交通、从通信、从车辆，几个方面来共同推进的。
So let me answer this question with two parts. So first of all, in terms of standards, it is a joint effort between multiple departments and agencies in China, and we have to take lots of elements into consideration. So we're talking about communications, transportations, and vehicles.
那我们再举一个比较详细的一个例子，例如这个车辆通信这个例子来讲，V2X communication。 那么，从底层的通信技术来讲的话，更多的是从我们 ICT 和 MIT 的角度来提出。那么，对于网络层以及应用层的很多标准来说的话，就是由我们交通和汽车的人来共同来制定的，会形成这样一个统一的一个标准体系，来共同推进我们整个跟我们车辆联网相关的一些技术的一些创新。
So let me get a little bit more specific here. In terms of V2X for vehicle communications, then we're talking about ICT and MIT. So in terms of the applications and the internet standards, then we'll have the joint efforts between our ministries and agencies that are responsible for communications as well as technology. So together, they'll set up standards and to promote innovation in terms of standards.
And if I can just offer a comment on the same topic of standards in the United States, this is an area where the United States has fallen behind, specifically in the autonomous vehicle area. The desire is to have standards just to make it easier for the multitude of automotive companies and technology firms that are operating in this area to have some agreed upon ways to advance this technology. Unfortunately, the United States has not really mandated many technical standards in the area of autonomous vehicles. It's something that we actually share with the European Union. The European Union also has lagged in developing technical standards, and I think this is an area where we need to do a much better job if the United States wishes to remain competitive, because China has actually made much more progress in this area than we have.
那么就针对这个问题呢，我也来谈一谈我们现在美国的一个做法，以及美国的现在的情势。那么就美国的标准来说呢，其实在自动驾驶汽车这方面的标准是比较滞后的。那么当然呢，大家希望的做法呢，就是能够有一套同样的标准，给我们不管是汽车公司也好，还是技术公司也好，都能够轻易的去利用这套标准来去刺激创新。 但是呢，现在比较不幸的一个状况就是美国政府在这一块的做法还并不是非常的前进。那么不管是在自动汽车也好，还是其他的技术领域也好，我们其实跟欧盟是一块的。那么欧盟在这方面的工作也是比较滞后的，就是关于技术性上的标准呢，我们还没有办法做到同样一步的这个设定。 那么这一方面呢，若是我们想要保持这个竞争性，是必须要进行更进一步的改善的。因为在中国这方面的工作是做得比较领先的。
I think my answer sounded much more articulate and sophisticated in Chinese than in English, so thank you very much for that. But, I have one more question, and then we'll open the floor to any questions or comments that you have. And the question involves security and privacy. So at the end of your presentation, you mentioned the importance of maintaining security and promoting privacy in autonomous vehicles. How is China thinking about these issues? What are you doing to try and advance both privacy and security with autonomous vehicles?
那么我最后再问一个问题，然后我们就开放给底下的观众提问。那么这个问题呢，是刚刚您在报告之中提到了关于安全及隐私的这个重要性。那么我现在想问，就是关于在自动驾驶汽车的安全跟隐私方面，中国做了什么样的工作呢？这个汽车你没有吧？
我来回答这个问题哈，从我想可能，数据包括隐私的问题呢，是我们中国也好还是全球也好，是一个共同的问题，那么中国应该是非常重视这方面的挑战，那么在中国的网络安全法里面，关于这个数据的保护隐私方面是有相应的规定的，然后呢。 在一些部委的这种政策性的这种规定里面，也有这个相应的规定，但是我想可能从这个自动驾驶汽车这部分的，这部分的话，这个关于数据保护和个人隐私部分的一些工作呢，我觉得还是比较并没有完成，我们还没有出台一个针对这个领域的专门的这样的一个政策或者是法律。 但我想可能我们有一个共同的一个就是通用性的这个法律是有的，然后也可能我们下一步需要在针对这个特定领域再做一些更详细的研究和规定。
So let me take that question. In terms of data security and also privacy, this is an issue that's not only important to China, but also for the rest of the world. So in China, we do take this challenge very seriously. We do have the Internet Security Law, and in terms of data protection and privacy, that's where it is governed. Also, across many department agencies, they work very hard to make sure that we have rules and policies governing that. However, when we are talking about very specific issues regarding autonomous vehicle, there's still work to be done. So the laws and regulations governing those are yet to be completed. And I believe that even though we have laws and regulations governing the communications part of it, it is going to be our next step to do more research and to think about how we should write the laws and regulations governing privacy and data security in terms of autonomous vehicle.
And in the United States, we obviously face challenges both in terms of security and privacy in regard to autonomous vehicles. I think one of the things we will need to consider is the adoption of what I would call anti-malicious behavior activity as it relates to autonomous vehicles. Maybe you can translate that part.
那么在美国呢，我们其实也是面对同样的挑战，就是关于安全以及隐私问题上的挑战。那么我认为，在美国也许我们可以推荐的一个做法呢，就是针对于这个自动汽车呢，应该去实行一个所谓的反恶意行为的一个做法。So
for example, a couple weeks ago, I was at a Southern University giving a talk about autonomous vehicles, and there. This university has already adopted autonomous people movers for the students. It's a large campus, so they have these autonomous vehicles that students can take to move across the campus. And what is happening on that campus is skateboarders are seeing these autonomous people movers and basically riding their skates right up to the autonomous vehicle just to see how it's going to react. It's kind of like a digital game of chicken that is taking place. And my worry is that this will become a more prevalent part. You know, we've heard about people using laser beams or lights to try and distract the LIDARs of autonomous vehicles. So we need to think about anti-malicious behavior legislation so that people aren't playing games with the technology and trying to deceive it into taking actions that otherwise would not be called for.
那么我就给各位举个例子嘛，几周前呢，我在一所大学做了一个讲话，当时讲话的主题呢，就是跟这个自动驾驶汽车相关的。那么在这个学校呢，因为它校园的这个面积比较广大，所以学校其实已经开始使用一种无人驾驶的这种载具，就是把学生呢从一个点带到另一个点。那么当时呢，就有些学生他们开始因为好玩，所以呢就他们。 划的这个板呢，他们就把这个板一路就划到这个车子上面去了，就看这个车子会有什么样子的反应，就好像是他们在打电游一样的这样的一个做法，看看它是什么样的反应。或者是呢，也有一直有听说，就是有些人他们会使用这种激光，然后使用这种灯啊，还有激光啊，去影响这些车子上面他们的激光的这个雷达，看他们会有什么样的反应。那么其实呢，这就是为什么我们需要推行出这种反恶意行为的这种法令。
去确保人在针对这些科技，对待这些技术的时候，不是以一种恶意的或者是玩闹的性质去误导我们的这些激光的这种技术，使他们做出本来不会产生的反应。And in the privacy area, we need to do a better job in terms of consumer notification in cases where there are data breaches. And we've already seen in other sectors that from time to time there are either breaches of personal security or intruders who gain access to systems or other ways in which our private information is being compromised. And obviously we need to maintain security to limit those things, but when they do happen, it's important that the consumers get notified very quickly so that they can take whatever remedial action is required by that. Oftentimes, a lot of the current data breach legislation is at the state level, and the states vary enormously in exactly what the consumer notification requirements are. But I think this is an area that we need to be more vigilant in order to help ensure that personal privacy is maintained.
那么讲到隐私的这个部分呢，我想我们在隐私的部分应该要做到的一点就是更好的去通知消费者，尤其是呢当这些数据被泄露出去的时候呢，要更及时的让消费者知道。那么其实在其他的产业目前已经有类似的状况发生，就是个人隐私的这些信息被泄露出去，或者是有其他的黑客去侵入他们这些系统，使得个人的这些信息没有办法得以完全的受到保护。所以呢，当然在数据安全方面，我们必须更进一步的做更大量的工作去首先呢先防止这个事情的发生，但是一旦事情发生以后呢，要有更好的方法去通知消费者，让他们能够及时的做出反应。那么很多时候呢，这方面相关的法令呢，就是数据保护的法令，是在州政府的这个层级上去做的，所以呢，我认为我们需要更严谨的法令去保护消费者的隐私。
By the way, I kind of like this format where I get to ask myself a question and then I can answer it. It's a great way to answer it that you like the questions that come up. But we want to give you a chance to participate as well. So if you have a question or a comment, raise your hand. Right here, we have a gentleman with his hand up. There's a microphone coming right behind you. If you can give us your name and your organization, and then after your question, we'll have the Chinese translation of it.
Sandy Apgar, CSIS. Two-part question. First, are the technical standards for autonomous vehicles, and for that matter, any other type of transportation equipment, universal? It seems to me that an autonomous vehicle, wherever it may be geographically, has technical standards that are identical. And if they are, should this be approached on a multilateral basis, not simply national? And second, if we did have universal, or at least widely accepted technical standards, would the fragmentation that you, Mr. West, described at the beginning, particularly in the U.S., be reduced, if not entirely solved, through standards?
Okay, great question. Do you want to translate it?
那么我是来自我们美国战略中心的这个一个代表，我现在想问的一个问题是关于技术性标准的问题。那么就是关于这个自动驾驶汽车也好，或是其他的这种载具也好，我们在技术标准上面是不是有一个统一的标准？就是在地理位置上，各国方面是不是有一个统一的标准呢？那么如果它是现在是需要各国的统一的这个标准，是不是应该是一个多方的一个进程，而不是一个单一国家去进行制定的一件事情呢？那若是我们现在确实已经有了这个统一的标准，那么是不是因为美国的这样子的州立的这种分制的方法会使它弱化了呢？
Why don't I answer first, and then if you want to add anything. I think ideally in the area of digital innovation, we would want technical standards to be global in nature. So for example, mobile technology is now ubiquitous around the world. There we had internationally agreed upon standards that I think really eased the innovation, led to kind of a successful and globally integrated mobile system. And that enabled a lot of innovation in lots of other areas, healthcare, education, transportation, and so on. In the autonomous vehicle area so far, you can imagine it's very complicated to get a global agreement on anything. So right now, we're kind of starting at the national level or the regional level. But even at that level, the United States is having great difficulty agreeing among ourselves on what the technical standard could be. The European Union has failed in exactly the same way. And so kind of when you have difficulty at the national level, you can imagine how challenging it is to get global standards on autonomous vehicles.
那么我就首先来回答这个问题，然后再请我的中国的同事来进行补充。那么我认为呢，理论上我们在现在这种数字的这个创新的时代，应该所有的这些标准应该要到达一个统一的境界，特别是在全球上面必须进行统一。那么事实上呢，就其他领域来说，比如说移动通信这个部分，在全球上确实是有一个统一的标准，现在在许多的地方都有这种泛载的技术。那么也因为国际上有了这套标准，所以我们能够更好的去推进创新。所以呢，现在我们在全球的范围上确实是已经有比较成功的已经进行整合过的通信的系统，那么这也使得创新呢变得更加容易能够进行。那么也因为如此，所以呢不论是在医疗啊，还是在教育啊，或者在交通上面，因为这一套的统一的这个标准，我们能够更好的去推动去 更好的进行创新。不过呢，讲到自动驾驶汽车的这个部分，现在在全球上是没有统一的标准的。现在呢，各国甚至是各地区正在进行各自的标准的这种促进以及推动。但是呢，就连在美国国内以内，我们都没有办法达成统一的意见。在技术标准上面呢，我们在内部都没有办法达成统一的意见，就更别去谈要在全球上面达成统一的意见。那么事实上呢，欧盟也是一样的，在这个范围上没有办法做得非常的成功。所以呢，大家知道在全球上面达成的统一的这个标准是非常困难的，这确实是一个很大的挑战。
好，那我从中国的方面的话再做一点补充。我非常同意刚才戴尔所说的，就是自动驾驶当前并没有形成一个全球统一化的一个过程。那么也非常同意刚才他提到，其实是在我们在跟这个汽车领域或者说交通领域人在交往的过程当中，也会发现就是他们会觉得5G 做一个全球统一的一个标准的话是非常好的一个实践，他们也希望借鉴这样的一种方式来推动未来整个自动驾驶的一些标准化的一些进程。但是确实现在当前处于一个非常初期的一个阶段，因为我们知道自动驾驶技术本身并没有很完备，也没有说讨论清楚自动驾驶技术所需要的标准化的需求有哪些。因为在这个过程当中的话，很多自动驾驶的东西是需要去标准化的，也有很多是需要个性化定制的。就尤其我们现在比如说Google 在测的这个自动驾驶车辆，它就没有这种互联的需求的时候，它就不需要进行很大的一个标准化的一个过程。
Yes, so I'd just like to add a few words. So I very much agree with what Dara just mentioned, that there is no universal standards when it comes to AVs. But a lot of times when you talk to people about transportation, about communications, everyone would agree that it's a great thing that we have this universal standard for 5G. So based on that, we're able to promote innovation and to build on that. However, when it comes to autonomous vehicles, first of all, the technologies themselves are still in their infancy. So we're still not very clear about what exactly we need to have standard. So when you think about a autonomous vehicle, a lot of times you have to let the automaker decide what they want to customize and what needs to be actually required or what needs to be standardized. For example, for Google, their AV that they're testing now, they don't really need as much connectivity, so then maybe they don't need as much standard.
那有一些的话就是说在自动驾驶领域其实我们也在做一些标准化的一些过程，比如说我们的通信的技术和我们数据的一些规范，这些是在正在进行的在中国这个范围内。那我们的话其实也可以理解，比如说像这个美国地区在进行通信的话有这个 SAE 的2735这个标准，那么中国也会定义一些跟我们数据需要发送的格式相关的一些设计互联互通的一些标准。那这些的话是在推进当中的，我们也知道在 ISO 也是在讨论一些这种就是网络层以上的需要互联互通的一些标准化的一些需求，那么我们也在推进整个全球的一些标准化的一些过程。
So in terms of autonomous vehicles within China, we are working towards setting up standards, especially when in terms of data and communications. So we know that in the United States, there's also SAE 2735 standards, that's governing communications aspect. And so within China, we're also looking at how we should better protect data and in terms of communications. I also know that internationally, ISO is also working on this level and to see how they could better set standards for networks and for interconnectivity.
Okay, other questions? Right here, there's a lady on the aisle with a question.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for your presentation on smart transportation. My question is, my company is called Segeros International Group. I'm focused here. I focus more with groups that do tourism and travel. Looking at your G5, how do you look at international as what he was saying? And even here in America, looking at access to translation, maybe a Japanese may enter the vehicle. I want something to ask him something in Japanese or Chinese or Spanish. How do they get to know and get into the vehicle and go where they are going? I've seen such a vehicles here. So looking at translations in the vehicle, in the G5, how do you look at universal and local here? Thank you.
好，大家早上好。那么非常感谢您刚刚做的一个报告。那么我现在关于智能交通这方面呢，其实还有一个问题，就是关于 标准上面，比如说像语言上面的问题、翻译上面的问题。假设呢，我们在这边有一个日本的一个访客，他进了一个自动驾驶的一个汽车，那么他要如何与这个汽车进行沟通呢？进行通信呢？那么我们不管是从统一国际上的角度来看，还是地方的这个角度来看，应该怎么看待这个问题
？OK， 哦、oh.。我觉得这是一个很有趣的一个问题啊。其实从这个问题回答的话，我们也可以谈两方面。第一个的话就是说，当前汽车的这个 HMI 就是人机交互的这个部分是跟人工智能是充分结合在一起的，也就是说我们现在当前使用的一些智能的一些设备能够对不同种的语言进行翻译，那我们以后如果作为车和人之间交往的一个通信的时候，也会有很好的一个翻译的一个过程。那我们车不仅能够理解人的语言，也能理解人的动作和他的感情，甚至能去感受我们每一个车主的一个不同的一个行为习惯，这是一方面。
So that's a very interesting question, and I'll answer you in twofold. So first of all, when we're talking about HMI, so human-machine interactions, a lot of it is also done through AI, so artificial intelligence. When we are talking about translation or language capability, we're not only talking about language between people, but also the language between the car and the people. And so cars themselves, with the help of AI, they will not only be able to understand the oral language of the humans, they will also be able to understand their behaviors, even their emotions, and also the behaviors of other cars.
另外一方面来讲的话 ，sorry, explain that. 就是另外一方面来讲的话，就是说，其实这里头还有一个更难的一个问题是车和车之间怎么进行理解，因为我们以前在讲的更多是人和人的交往。或者人和物能够进行连接了，那其实更深的一个层面就是说，我们现在谈的更多的是物与物的连接。那么物与物在连接的过程当中，它更需要能够去彼此去理解，这也就是我们现在在 5G 所从事的，或者说我们在做车联网当中所需要去推动的一些标准化的一些工作，能够让不同厂家的汽车和不同厂家汽车之间能够进行通信，并且能够理解它的行为，这样才能去实现一些自动驾驶的一些典型的应用。
Obviously, the more difficult part will be how does a car communicate with another car. So a lot of time when we're talking about communications, we're talking about people-to-people communication or perhaps people-to-devices or vehicle communication. But the really challenging part is for cars to be able to communicate to another car, so for device to be able to communicate to another device. So that's also what we're doing with the 5G and with our research. So that's also another reason why we need standards. We need to make sure that one car manufactured by one company is going to be able to communicate with another car that's manufactured by a different company. So they need to be able to understand each other in just their behaviors and their patterns.
Okay, Fred has a question right behind you. Yeah, right here on the aisle, yep.
I'm Fred Altman, I'm retired. I just have a couple quick points. By going to the self-driving cars will reduce the total number of cars, but the number of hours each of these cars is going to be on the road is going to be considerably increased. So what is going to be the net effect on the number of hours, vehicle hours or something like that? The other one is just sort of trivial. How does this all interact with going from gasoline engines to electric motors? Mm-hmm.
那么我是一个退休人士，我想问的问题呢，就是关于自动驾驶的这些汽车。当我们看到越来越多的这个车子，自动驾驶的汽车在被使用的时候，那么路上的这个车子的总数自然会降低。可是呢，每一个车子的驾驶的这个英里数或是时间呢，当然也会跟着上升。那么这对于车子本身会有什么样的影响？同时呢，现在我们开始从这个油转换成电的这个汽车，这又会有什么样子的影响呢？
Maybe I can answer the question about the vehicle hours. I think you're exactly right that what industry experts are anticipating is going to happen over the next 20 years or so is there will be fewer cars on the road, but each car will probably be on the road longer and longer. And secondly, what the car manufacturers are worried about is there's going to be a drop in car ownership, because if you already look at car ownership by age, young people are dropping even compared to their own previous history, the idea that they should own a car. Increasingly, young people are relying on car sharing services. So we're assuming that there's going to be the technology changes, but there are also going to be social and economic changes in how we think about cars, how we use cars, and the extent to which we own them. But
in terms of the possible benefits in terms of air pollution, people still believe there's going to be a net benefit, even you know, with the types of shifts that we're talking about, that the shift towards autonomous vehicles will help with traffic congestion and also help in terms of the quality of air.
好，那么我先来回答这个问题吧。那么，我认为呢，就您刚刚说的这个想法，其实是完全没有错的。现在我们产业的所有专家都认为，在接下来的20年，路上的车子会越来越少，同时呢，每一辆车子在路上的时间会越来越长。那么呢，这个它其实有几方面的这个影响。 那么就是其实呢，现在我们看年轻人的趋势跟传统的这一代的世代比呢，其实年轻人现在已经越来越不愿意去拥有这个车辆，那么他们现在更愿意去进行汽车共享或是共乘这些做法。所以呢，现在随着技术在改变，其实呢，不只是技术本身会改变，同时我们社会以及经济上面都会有影响。慢慢的，我们对 车辆的这个思考会改变，同时呢，大家对于是否应该拥有车辆的这个想法也会改变。那么至于您刚刚提到第二点，确实这个自动驾驶汽车它对于空气质量的改善呢是有一定的效果的。那么我们现在在所有的这个预测或者是研究上面都显示，那么 这些拥有自动驾驶车辆以后呢，不只是对交通拥堵的这个问题会有所解决，同时也会改善我们的空气质量。我补充一点啊。
就是非常同意这个达尔先生的那个想法，补充一点呢是，在中国对于汽车的未来，我觉得有一个比较共同的认识是四个方面的，一个我们叫网联化，就是所有的车是联网的；第二个是这个智能化，那就是把 AI 把智能技术嵌入进去；第三个是电动化，会。 电动化会到有这个汽油车、化石能源车会变成这种电动汽车。第四个是共享化，因为大家会共享汽车会成为主流，所以这也是我们的一个汽车界的中国汽车界的一个认识。我想跟Daryl现在说的那个方向是比较很高度吻合的。嗯哼。
So I'd just like to quickly add. I very much agree with Daryl just said. In fact, in China, within the car industry, we also have four trends that we are seeing in the future. So the first of all, that we're going to see more, we're definitely going to see more of these autonomous vehicles on the road, and we're also going to see more AI incorporated in these vehicles. And then we're going to see vehicles using more and more new energies. And then we are also going to see more and more people using shared rides and shared services. So I feel that all these trends are essentially inconsistent with what he just said.
Well, thank God for that. there's a question right here, this gentleman close to the window back there.
My name is Kumar and I'm retired. It's unclear to me how vehicles would, cars would react or communicate with other vehicles on the road, like bicycles and motorcycles and scooters. So how do you deal with that?
您好，我是一位退休人士。那么我现在有一点不清楚的一点呢，就是这些自动驾驶汽车呢，它们跟其他的路上的这些载具是用什么样子的方式来进行沟通跟联系的？比如说呢，像是自行车呀，或者是摩托车呀，这种轻型重型的摩托车，他们是如何互相沟通？从技术来讲的话，这个可以从三个方面来回答。 第一个的话就是说，车辆自身在进行自动化的时候，它会进行一些自动化的改造，比如说我们安装了雷达、激光雷达和一些摄像头。那么通过这些主动式的一些探测，能够去探知到我们路边的人、行人和这个一些摩托车和一些这种弱势的一些交通工具。那么从此的话，就是说我们会做出一些主动的控制来避免对弱势这个交通参与者的一些影响，这是一方面。第二个的来讲的话，我们会有一些互联的一些方式。 就以后我们的人和我们的这个交通工具，弱势交通工具本身也会是一个是联网的一个有这样一些联网的一些终端，那么就可以主动的话去跟我们的汽车进行这样一个通信。
第三个的话，我们会通过路侧的一些基础设施的一些升级改造来感知到更多的信息，比如说我们路侧安装的摄像头和一些路侧的一些 AI 的一些技术，通过这些技术本身能够去识别到我们全体的一个信息化的一个情况和一些我们整个整体交通的情况，那么把这些信息也会重新通过一些通信的方式来下发到车里，让车去感知到更多的关于我们信息的一个 highway。就是以后我们可以打一个比方，就是说现在我们在做这种高速公路的时候，是一个实体的这种高速公路，是没有这个其他的一些交通元素在参与其中的，是一个比较简单的一个环境。那么以后未来的话，会是一些虚拟化的高速公路，即使这个路是在城区内，有很多的参与者在这其中是一个混杂的一个方式，但是通过一些信息化的手段，可以去实现这条公路是一个可以看作是一个虚拟化的一个高速公路。
So I will answer you in three different aspects as well from a technical point of view. So first of all, when the car is automated or when we're talking about an AV, then this car itself will be equipped with many different technologies, for example, radar or LiDARs or even cameras. So the car itself could proactively detect and sense what's surrounding the car itself, whether it is just a human or a bike or any other vehicles that's on the road. So they can proactively take control and make sure that they can respond accordingly.And then from the second aspect is from people's point of view. So more and more people could be connected to the network, and through many different kind of terminals or devices, they could also send information to the cars or to bikes or other vehicles on the road. And then the third part will be on the roadside. So when roads are retrofitted, then they are going to be equipped with sensors and cameras and incorporated with AI technologies. So they'll be able to collect lots of information about what's going on the road, about what's going on with the vehicles, and about the traffic. And together, they will incorporate it into a highway system, information highway. And with that, they'll be able to better control the traffic and send information to each of the vehicles on the road. So when we talk about highway today, we're talking about physical highway, and it's a relatively simple idea. But in the future, we might actually be able to establish virtual highways where all kinds of information that I just talked about and all elements of traffic participation will be able to contribute into that system.
There's a question right here. Microphone right behind you.
Thank you. My name is Jim Connors. I'm impressed with the fraternity stories of how America deals with this by skateboarding into the machines and shining lasers to screw up the logic. Does China have that kind of problem?
I hope not.
刚刚您说的那个经验分享呢，就是有一些学生他们会把这个滑板一路滑到这个智能车辆里面去，或者是拿这个激光棒，或者是用光线去使得这个车辆没有办法去很好的做逻辑辨识。请问同样的问题在中国也有吗？
我回答，就是比较有趣的一方面的话，就是说中国可能没有学生会更乖一些，他们的这个不会去做这种就是说调皮捣蛋的事情，但是中国也有很多专家，尤其是一些黑客的或者说安全的一些专家，他们会做这样一些事情，去对车辆进行一些安全的一些测试，来保证我们的确实就是说，我觉得这部分工作是非常重要的，能够保证我们的雷达或者激光雷达在有外界干扰的情况下也能够去正常的工作，那能够保证我们的这个整车的一个 safety， 也能够去保证我们不会在外界干扰下产生一些错误的一些影响。
So that's actually very interesting. So in China, I feel that our students behave a little bit better. They're not as naughty. I do know that in China, there are hackers that would do things like that. And we actually also have safety and security experts that do these experiments on purpose to make sure that when they are faced with such interference, it will still behave as it normally would. So this is some kind of test that we actually do, especially in terms of radar, LiDAR, and how the car collects information. And this is actually a very important thing that they do.
其实我补充一个，其实某种程度上在美国发生的也很有可能在中国发生。所以有的时候我想也很难避免，所以比较重要的，我是同意大二先生说的 或者你需要一个从法律上或者管制规制上有些规则来去对这些恶意行为里面会有一些约束。
So I would just like to add, so what happened in the United States might also happen in China someday. So that's why I very much agree with what Daryl said, that maybe we need some sort of laws, regulations to regulate people's behaviors, and maybe that would also help.
Okay, there's a question right here, this gentleman right here.
Hi, Kenyon Corbett, Transportation Learning Center. There's a lot of exciting benefits with the autonomous vehicles and the smart transportation, but I'm wondering if you're doing any thinking in terms of transportation workforce and the impacts on them, particularly with respect to high-quality unionized jobs?
好，非常感谢。那么事实上呢，这个无人驾驶汽车或是智能交通确实都有非常多令人期待的这种好处。不过呢，我在想的是关于现在就在这个交通运输行业里面工作的这些人，他们会受到什么样的影响？特别是有一些这些所谓的高价值，并且是由工会所规范的、所约束的这些人。
Maybe I can respond to that, and if you have any responses, we can go from there. In terms of the workforce consequences, I actually have a new book that just came out entitled The Future of Work, Robots, AI, and Automation that looks at the implications of many of these technology trends. But on autonomous vehicles in general, I'd say most countries around the world are expecting this to be a real growth area in terms of the overall economy, as well as a part of the economy that is going to create additional jobs in terms of the future. But I think it's also true that the kind of workforce we're going to need is going to be different. We're going to need people with more advanced skills, design skills, and so on. It's not just going to be entry-level jobs, but jobs with more technical skills involved with them. We're already seeing consequences in terms of manufacturing. Factories are getting more automation built into them. There are more industrial robots that are being deployed. AI is becoming important in a variety of different sectors. So I think we do need to, as a society, think about the workforce ramifications and the need for worker retraining.
那么首先就让我来回答一下这个问题。那么确实呢，对于这个劳工人口的这个影响，那么最近其实刚有一本书刚刚出版，他在讲的就是未来的这个劳工就业的一个趋势。那么他谈到了关于机器人、人工智慧，还有这种自动化会产生的一些后果。那么事实上呢，现在在我觉得在全球范围来说呢，各国都有一个认识，就是这个自动化汽车其实它在全面经济上面来说呢，是应该是会带来更多的这个成长，同时呢，它也会在这一块的特定的经济领域去创造更多的就业机会。不过呢，确实我们在面对未来的这个劳动人口，他们所需要的这个技能是一定会有所改变的。那么在未来所需要的这些劳动人口，他们需要有更高的这个技术性的技能，它不再是像现在比较传统的入门式的这种劳动的这个技能，我们需要的这个人才会变得更加的不同。那么这现在已经是成为一个现实，比如说在制造业吧，那么现在有许多的工厂已经进行了自动化，有更多的这个工业的这个机器人来进行使用，同时也更多的使用人工智能等等，人工智慧等等。所以呢，我们作为一整个社会应该去更全面的看待这个问题，就是这些人员他们会受到什么样子的影响，有什么样的后果，同时在他们的下岗后又要做什么样子的措施。
Anything either one of you would like to add? Yeah.
我想我再补充一点啊，其实这个达尔比我更有发言权，因为他做了更多的研究，今天上午还送了一本关于这方面的书，我回去再读一下。我呢从中国的一些情况其实说一下我的一些观点啊。首先呢，就是关于自动化、关于机器人、关于 AI 对工作岗位的影响，我觉得现在还是一个我们还没完全考虑的清楚，但是可以预计的是有非常大的一个挑战的，这是一个方面。
I would just like to add a few words. Obviously, I feel that my colleague Daryl here has way more experience than I do in terms of this area, and he has done lots of research, even gave me a book this morning. I'm going to go back and read more about it. But I will just briefly talk about how I see it from China's point of view. So it is true that automation, AI, and robots are going to have a huge impact on workforces. We haven't really have a very thorough research done on in this regard, and I do believe that this is going to become a major challenge.
第二个方面呢，就是我给点那个，就是我自己的观察吧。其实是你会发现很有意思，在中国发生的，一个方面是关于这个自动化，那么中国也引入了大量的机器人，在工厂里面。那么最典型的，我曾经去过的像。 做中国有一个做苹果的那个富士康，他们做苹果的手机的那工厂里面，我去的时候已经很多工人已经不在了，那么都是用机器人代替的，这是一个现象。但是呢，似乎在目前来说，由于中国自己的这个人口红利的减少，没有那么多的劳动力了，所以实际上这方面对就业的影响。 似乎是不大的，这是一个 case。对，然后我想完，对，那么还有一个 就业岗位产生的影响就是修车的人，因为共享自行车里面，他采用了新的技术，那么他不需要修车了，所以就很多的人呢就会，也不自己买自行车了，他会用这个共享的自行车，像这个摩托啊、FO这样的，这样的话就很有很多修车的那些人他就没有这个车可修了。
就自行车，所以这个你可以看到，这是一个影响，但我们想我们怎么去解决，恐怕这些丢失的岗位里面需要新的岗位来补充，然后需要更多的那些培训，来有新让他们用新的技能，所以我给了两个例子，实际上是两个不同的效果的，所以可以看到这个问题的复杂性。
And I also want to talk about my personal observations. So this is actually a very complex issue, and I will share it from two points of view. So the first thing is that how automation has entered the manufacturing industry. So I've actually visited Foxconn before. I'm not sure if you know Foxconn is the company or the factory that makes iPhones. When I visited Foxconn's plants, I realized that there weren't a lot of people working there at all. It's mostly robots or automation that's really doing the job. So if you really think about this, the population in China is in a way decreasing, the labor, the working population is decreasing. So perhaps it's not going to have that huge of an impact on them. However, on the other hand, if you really think about it, Share bikes is a huge thing in China now. I think last time I read, we have more than 20 million share bikes on the road now. So because we have such a huge amount of share bikes on the road, more and more people decide not to own their own bikes. And this actually have a huge impact on the repairmen that repair bikes. So because people start giving up their own bikes, they just use share bikes, then the repairmen don't have jobs anymore. And so in this way, we also have to think about how can we replace the lost jobs? How do we provide more training for the people that lose their jobs because of these new technology and new trends?
Okay, I think we are out of time, but I want to thank Mr. Yu and Mr. Gi for sharing their thoughts. Those of you who want to see our paper, Smart Transportation in China and the United States, visit the Brookings website at brookings.edu. And thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.